You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Fraser. This is your seat at the table. Welcome to Business Lunch with Roland Fraser. Today we have Ryan Dice with us, and we think you'll enjoy hearing how this podcast got started, and then Ryan gives us a window into the origin story of Digital Marketer with some insights that could be pivotal in your story too. Also, listen through to the end to hear about the Napkin Challenge.
Hey, speaking of delectable, you eat a lot of food, Roland.
I do, and speaking of Business Lunch, that's what this is. Business Lunch, it's short and sweet. I know I'm sweet, Ryan.
I'm the short part. Is that what we just did there? You somehow incorporated a short joke.
Yeah, I did.
Into the opening monologue.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do.
No, one of the things that I think is really cool about this is we have the opportunity to go out, have lunch, hang out with smart, fun, interesting people, and all the time we would come back from one of these lunches and we'd say, God dang it, I really wish I would have taken better notes, or I wish we would have just recorded one of those things.
Or even, I wish you could have been there.
Right? Yeah, wish you could have been there. And so you decided one day, I guess, just to turn on your iPhone and actually record the dang old thing. And that's really the premise behind this entire show. I was explaining to somebody else, if you've ever been out to a restaurant and there's this really interesting conversation happening behind you and you're kind of...
You're totally ear hustling.
You're eavesdropping and you almost want to join in. Like,
I'm going to confess, I actually love to go to the Four Seasons and have lunch at Palo Alto,
uh-huh,
because the conversations that you accidentally overhear while you're leaning and straining to listen to them,
yeah,
are amazing. The deals that are going on, it's like you want a seat at the table. And so to me, this Business Lunch thing is a seat at the table, right?
I choose instead to go to this like local bar for lunch, mm-hmm, and just listen to people break up.
Nice.
So
that's
you've
awesome
got
too.
The way that you like to spend your lunch and the conversations that you like to eavesdrop in.
Right.
And I have mine.
There's nothing like people fighting.
And I need you to not judge me for that. But no, I mean, this is an opportunity not to like listen in and eavesdrop on like an awful conversation, but yeah, to be able to listen in and eavesdrop on those rare, really, really cool, interesting conversations where you'd like to be able to join in, you'd like to be able to ask questions.
But you don't have to suffer through all the stupid, horrible parts that we have to suffer through, because when some of the people we're talking to are talking, my God, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah.
But eventually, even a monkey says something interesting, right? So that's what happens. You get to hear the interesting things that people say.
And in the premium level of Business Lunch,
right,
which is like $20 million a year,
right,
we actually name names, and we talk about the lunches that were super boring and the people that were really obnoxious.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's
you could sign
upsell
up. Yeah, that's at businesslunch.com/. Oh, yeah. You got to figure out how to spell it first.
It's common spelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a common spelling.
But yeah, so it's a way to get together and talk about stuff that you probably would never get to hear otherwise. And despite ourselves, despite our best efforts, we say some interesting things from time to time.
And we hang out with people that say interesting things from time to time. I know that some of the biggest business breakthroughs that we've had, that we've experienced, they haven't come from reading books, although books are great. They haven't come from attending events, although attending events are great. They've come from those private one-on-one conversations where you ask somebody a very specific question about a specific challenge and you get a very specific answer.
Or it's the Post-it note or penicillin, because we weren't trying to accomplish this. It's just that that's what came out of the conversation, and you know, it's revelatory.
Such a big word.
I like that.
Do you use big words a lot during Business Lunch?
Yes, definitely.
Do you do that to make yourself look smarter than you are?
No, I do it because I have a horrible crisis of self-worth.
Oh, okay.
And I want to feel better about myself.
Yeah, got it.
And the education, the dollars that I spent, you know, going to college and stuff.
Yeah. I would. I just don't know any of them.
Yeah.
I use them out of context.
So Business Lunch is didactic, right? It's something that's intended to add an air of verisimilitude to the conversation, and we're not going to be surreptitious about our knowledge and our ability to advance people, right?
What is surreptitious?
It's like clandestine.
Ah,
yeah.
Now I know. What the hell was any of that? Okay.
Well, just as long as you realize this is not an eleemosynary effort. This is definitely...
There's no... You just made up that word.
I didn't. It means nonprofit.
Eleemosynary?
Ish.
Spell it.
No. I don't do spelling.
I just do the talkie with the mouth.
Exactly. I've heard your story from the TNC presentations with the in the blue tight spandex suit, but I don't know completely, and I heard you telling Rachel Hollis and Amy Porterfield last night a little bit about it, but that was only the ear hustling while listening to other conversations. So tell me, where did the whole internet thing start for you.
Let me turn back the clock just a little bit. So in 1999, I made my very first sale on the internet. I built a very simple little website. I made my very first sale, and that's when I was hooked. That was when I realized, wow, this is one of the coolest things in the world. Someone who I don't even know from somewhere in a different part of the world found my stupid little website, scrolled all the way down to the bottom, clicked a button, entered their credit card information, and gave me money for something that I had. I mean, that for me was an incredibly powerful moment. And at the time when I started doing this, I wasn't doing it to get rich. You know, I wasn't doing it even thinking it was a business. I was just doing it to try to make some extra money. You know, I'm sitting here today, you know, still running kind of the same type of business that I started as a 19-year-old. But the side of the story that I don't tell, if I'm talking from stage, you know, or talking to somebody and I want to look cool, right? But like, yeah, so I started, made my first sale online in 1999 from my college dorm room. By the time I graduated, I had almost 100 different websites generating sales from all over the world. The part of the story I don't like to tell as much is that within 2 years of graduating, I was $250,000 in debt because I still didn't know how to run a business. All those businesses that were generating, those little websites that were making a lot of money from search, well, the methods that I was using stopped working. So I decided I need to learn paid advertising. It took me too long to figure that out and too much money. So I'm now way, way, way upside down. It was around that time I decided I want to do an event because I'm so smart. So I'm going to do this event where I'm going to bring people together and we're going to talk about marketing stuff because I'd spoken at a bunch of other people's events and it seemed easy. Surely I can do it too. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Actually, when I decided I was going to do the event, it was before I realized how much trouble I was in, right? So I decide I'm going to do the event. Like 6 months later, I'm sitting at the Hilton Anatole in Dallas, Texas, and I'm sitting by myself at the bar. Now, mind you, my event is going to start. I've got these people that have flown in from all over the country, some people flown in internationally, that were there to hear me talk about digital marketing. And I'm not getting rested. You know, I'm not getting my beauty sleep in. I'm not reviewing my slide deck for the next morning. I am sitting at the bar at the Hilton Anatole in Dallas, Texas, by myself, drowning my sorrows away, feeling like the most pathetic person in the world because anybody looking in the outside would say that, oh, you're a pretty successful guy. Look at all these things that you have. I knew, and I was the only person that knew, I was broke. I was worse than broke. I was more money in debt than I thought I would ever make in my life. And I remember sitting there thinking, I've got all these people here. Is there a way that I can get out of doing the event? Like that thought crossed my mind. Is there a way I can get out of walking on stage tomorrow? And I knew I couldn't do that, right? I had a hotel contract. All these people would come in. So then my thought shifted to, okay, maybe this should just be the last thing that I do. Maybe I do this event and it's my swan song. I don't tell anybody that, but I do that and I essentially retire from entrepreneurship. And I let that idea really simmer for a good long while, you know, because it was hard and nothing that I was doing was working anymore. And all the stuff that used to work and all the things that seemed so easy, they're now really, really, really hard. And it doesn't work. So I remember sitting there thinking, what is working? Because I think a lot of people, they talk about how you got to hit rock bottom. You know, I think the benefit to hitting rock bottom is it forces you to establish a zero cost basis on your life. It forces you to deal with, okay, what are the only things that matter? Well, in business, rock bottom is bankruptcy. In business, when you go bankrupt, what happens is people with any claim whatsoever to your business, they come around and they decide what's valuable. You know, your stuff, your assets, it gets auctioned off. And what's amazing, and I've seen this happen to a number of businesses, the stuff that the owners thought was valuable, nobody else saw any value in. And that happens sometimes. We're so close to things, the projects that we're working on, the things that mean the most. Ultimately, those are the things that when we strip it all away, we go, God dang it, what a colossal waste of time. So I was already sitting there pondering this idea that I'm going to quit. I'm going to give up. I'm going to have to file bankruptcy. I remember thinking, all right, so if I file bankruptcy, what do I have here that people would actually want? What am I doing that's actually valuable? I think that in and of itself, like that question, that maybe call it like the rock bottom question. If you can ask that question before you hit rock bottom, that's better. If you can ask the question before you hit rock bottom, then you have the ability to benefit from it before things get really, really bad. But I mean, you should ask this about not just about your business, ask it about certain relationships. If I were moving to a new city, if I had a job that transferred me across the country, who are the people that I would still keep in touch with? Or who are the people that I'd be glad to get rid of? If you'd be glad to get rid of them, maybe get rid of them now from your life. It's a good question. If you're an employer, it's a good question to ask of your team. If we were to lose everything tomorrow, who would I want to hire back for the next thing? That's a rock bottom question, right? So how can you ask these rock bottom questions? Because oftentimes that's where you're going to see the things that are really worth keeping. So when I was sitting there at the Hilton Anatole in Dallas, Texas, I asked myself that question. Okay, well, if this whole thing is going to go bankrupt anyway, what's the only stuff that has any value that I might be able to sell, that I might be able to do? And I thought, okay, I've got some products. I've got some email lists, some subscribers. Those are really, really valuable. And I remember thinking, what else do I have? Like, what else do I do that actually works? What's something that we do that works? Because again, it can be really easy when you're in those bad moments to think that nothing you do works, to think that you're a total failure, you know, an abject just loser. But if you had any success in the past, even through just dumb luck, you did something that worked, right? So it's worth asking yourself, what did I do that worked? And I remember thinking, we're pretty good at getting customers. I hadn't accumulated $250,000 in debt because I had spent money and gotten nothing out of it. You know, I'd accumulated $250,000 in debt because I had spent more money than I should figuring out what would work. So I remember sitting there thinking, all right, so what does work? Sometime before, I had a conversation with a buddy of mine, and he got some advice one time from a billionaire. This billionaire told him, you know, if you can't describe your business, if you can't describe the value that you bring, the process that you bring to the table, if you can't describe how your business works, how your business gets customers, the value that your business delivers, if you can't describe that on a napkin, then it's too complicated, right? And I remember my buddy telling me this story from this conversation they had with the guy. And I had at that moment, okay, what is it that we do, right? What do we do that works? And I'm going to challenge myself in my semi-drunken, stressed out, frustrated, sad, pathetic state. I'm going to answer that charge. I'm going to describe how my business works on a napkin. And thankfully, I'm sitting at a bar. Cocktail napkins are all over the place. I remember reaching forward, grabbing a cocktail napkin. It said Hilton Anatole on it. I flipped it over to the side that didn't have anything on it. I asked the bartender if he had a pen that I could borrow. And I proceeded to draw a flow chart for how somebody goes from being a visitor to a buyer. They're going to first come in here. I'm going to give them something away for free to get their email address. If they opt in here, I'm going to then sell them something that's less expensive. And if they buy that, then I'm going to go ahead and offer them something over here that's more expensive. If they don't, I'm going to put them in this follow-up series that'll hopefully eventually get them to buy that. And at the end of the day, anybody who buys this, I'm going to follow up via the phone to get them to maybe invest in something else. Right? I literally just wrote out this simple little flow chart on a napkin. And I remember sitting there thinking, that's it. This is it. The reason that I got myself in trouble is because I added things to this process. I made it more difficult and more complicated than it needed to be. And I went to bed that night. I mean, I remember grabbing that napkin. I folded it up. I put it in my pocket. I said, this may be the secret. This may very well be the key. So I remember taking it out of my pocket and putting it on the nightstand next to my bed and going to bed for the first time in months happy. Because I just remember thinking, like, I think this, if I just do this, if I roll this out across every single business, it'll be simple and it works. This always works. I just need to do this. That year was the first year that we generated $1 million in revenue, had dug out of that debt and built a business that was very, very, very profitable and very successful. And to this day, I've always referred to that napkin as my $1 million napkin. If you come to the office, you know, I've got that stupid little napkin that still has Hilton Anatole in the back in a frame. Because that is it. This process, this documented process for transforming strangers into customers.
About a year ago, my friend asked me if I'd ever thought about how big my company would be if I had never, ever lost a customer. And that's a pretty crazy thing to think about. Of course, 100% customer retention is, as far as we know, impossible. But after that conversation, I really started thinking about how to increase customer retention. And after all, the more customers that you keep, the more money you do make, and it's generally 100% profit. So as most of you know, one of the most proven ways to increase retention is to communicate with your customers, which is why I've really been focusing on making our email newsletters great. And if you're interested in doing the same thing, I'd like to recommend you to our partners, the Newsletter Pros. They've done a ton of research on how email newsletters can make a big impact on customer retention, and they'll share it with you for free. Just text retention, 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 to 208-269-9111. That's 208-269-9111, and get your free retention guide.
That was the first thing where I said, okay, this is now an asset that I can take into any business and any venture that I would go into.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.